We're no mythologists, just two young Nigerians with a relatively recent interest in African mythology and storytelling. In each episode, we'll be recounting various myths and legends across the African continent, while drawing parallels between them as well as mass culture today.
It's all vibes, not juju.
No, juju. The African mythology podcast you never knew you needed.
Hi guys.
Hey guys.
Welcome to another episode of Nobi Juju podcast.
Yeah.
Insert applause here.
Honestly guys, it's always, as you know, a triumph.
Yes. When we are actually present and producing an episode.
And this one
is even, you know, this is probably one of our best returns yet.
Yes.
Because, you know,
swift.
Just swift.
Two months.
Hello guys. So this was actually recorded in May. I know we're like in September, but at the time it was a triumph because 2 months. Okay, I'm just back to the episode.
Life is really lifing. And yes, so we are here now.
So
thank you for joining us. So as we usually begin, we are going to start with
vibe of the week.
The vibes.
Yeah. So what was your vibe?
Honestly, and kind of in line with the theme of our episode today, my vibe of the week was Halle Bailey's rendition of Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid. Guys, I mean, how excited are you guys about this movie and this performance? Yeah. I really think... Yeah. I'm just preparing to have endless goosebumps throughout.
Yeah. That anytime I hear her sing, especially at the end where she has like that high note with the vibrato.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just like, I literally get chills every time that she sings.
No.
It's amazing. And she just has like such a royal, I don't know, way
she
of carrying herself.
Yeah, very royal presence.
She has it.
She has the it factor, which is rare in this.
We are a Halle Bailey as Little Mermaid supporting podcast here.
We are actually.
Set the record straight.
We really are. Which is why, you know, obviously Little Mermaid is premiering. I think actually it's been premiering in the UK in like, what, 5 days?
I think it's already. Isn't it already out in the US? Is it out in the US already?
I don't know if it's already out in the US. I don't know when it's premiering in the US. But it's premiering
it's
in
coming,
the UK.
Yeah, it's coming very soon.
This Friday, I think. Wow. Which is amazing. So yeah, guys, this is very on theme.
Very on theme.
Yes.
I'm
very impressed with ourselves.
Mine is not on theme at all. Mine is actually Queen Charlotte.
Ooh.
I know everybody... talking about it.
That was good.
But yeah, mine is Queen Charlotte.
That
like
was so good.
I think that's probably, you know, Netflix has been having a lot of misses.
Oh my gosh.
But Queen Charlotte, and also Beef. Have you watched Beef?
Oh, Beef was so good.
Beef was really good.
Beef made me want to just
go to therapy. No, not go to therapy.
I probably need it. Think about that.
I wasn't going to suggest anything, but you know, I just... Please continue.
Yes. Moving swiftly on. Beef was just so inspiring, just, you know, as someone who, you know, likes, loves film and loves, you know, screenwriting and things. It just made me want to kind of improve, you know, in that area, in that aspect. And I just found the way that they were able to kind of touch on the human experience and, you know, struggles that we all have, you know, with mental health was just so well executed. Like, yeah, it was really
and without
good.
Making it like preachy
PSA
as well, and you know,
yeah,
very like,
it just showed like the ripple effects of what generational like
trauma.
Yeah, trauma and, you know, like mental health. And also like obviously she had a kid in the series, and also dangers of like not dealing with your own trauma and then passing on to the next generation and continuing that. Like, yeah, it was just so, yeah, it was very, very impactful as well. Also very diverse. Yeah, it was really interesting to see it from like, because yeah, they've probably really very seen, few yeah. from like an Asian perspective. Yeah. Like, yeah. you don't really see many,
yeah,
many series like that. So
it just shows how much we need just a diversity in like the kind of stories that, you know, we're telling. Yeah. Like, not always, doesn't always have to be the same kind of, you know, face to these you know, very key issues and these very unique experiences. Like, they are universal to the human experience, so anyone can kind of have that. And so it's nice being able to see from a different cultural perspective. Definitely.
Okay, guys, enough of the serious stuff.
Honestly.
You know, that went to a very serious.
Very
serious, very quickly.
Where were the vibes,
but
guys?
The vibes have just disappeared. Yeah. But we're going to bring them back. We're going to bring them back.
Swiftly inject it.
Okay. Please stop. Please do not insert a sound clip here. Please do not. We're probably going to do it anyway because you are our editor.
Thank you.
Anyway, so you can actually do whatever you want.
And I will.
I actually don't have any skills
to edit. I always will.
But yeah, this episode is about the goddesses of the water.
Oh my gosh.
AKA mermaids.
Woo!
And yeah, this is like such a vast, I don't know how to explain it. Like a very like vast, you know, collection of mythology and stories. And we're only dipping our toe in the water, as usual. Dipping our toe in the water, get it? Mermaid water? Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. I will set a laugh track
thanks.
To make up for my thanks. Lack of a response.
Thanks. But yeah, so yeah, we're only literally like touching on like the surface of the whole thing. So yeah. There's as you probably know, obviously mermaids are very like historically relevant creature or entity that are present in all different, you know, parts of the world in different variations. So yeah, and obviously water is a very universal thing that we can all obviously water is like, I can't remember how much of our body is water. It's like 60% of our body is water. Like, it's a very like important thing to us as humans everywhere in the world, so it makes sense that there's so much lore about things related to water and goddesses and gods and things like that.
Yeah, and obviously like water in itself, like the ocean, the sea, I just find it's just so mysterious, and there's just so much about the sea and the ocean that we don't know. So it makes sense that it's kind of like an omnipresent thing throughout like various mythologies, because there's just a lot that we just don't really know about, and that adds to the mystique.
Yeah, like if you watch all those like documentaries about, I find that's even more interesting than the ones about the Christian land, because like there are depths of the ocean that no human being has ever been to, and whenever like they even touch like to like one level of depth, it's like this like crazy creature that nobody has ever seen in the history of ever. And you're like, oh my god, how are you, in the fact that you're able to, that creature is able to survive, withstand like such like pressures underwater, and like you can only imagine like what, even you can't even imagine what else lies below. And
it's so intriguing but also kind of scary as well.
I wanted to read one excerpt because I found this very a very like poignant way of explaining why water is so significant, especially in African mythology. And it's by
a paper that was in the Indigenous Knowledge Conference, 2001. I didn't even know there was an Indigenous Knowledge Conference, but I would love to attend. and it was written by a lady called Penny Bernard. She basically says that water in itself is regarded among many African religious functionaries as a living force, a powerful symbol, and medium for purification and healing. And as such, water sources are regarded as essential parts of the landscape for conducting rituals to aid communication with the spirit world. Mm-hmm. The spirit world is regarded as the ultimate source of such life-sustaining resources. Integral to such beliefs are various zoomorphic spirit manifestations, primarily the snake and the mermaid, who reside in or beyond the water and who interact with humans in a variety of ways. The rivers, wetlands, and the sea are the dwelling places of such manifestations and are of fundamental importance to many of the African healing traditions and their practitioners.
Wow.
So, yeah, that whole healing, you know, purification aspect of
water.
Of water as well is very important to why, yeah, there's so much lore about it. But yeah, we have two goddesses that we're going to be talking about today. One is a West African goddess and one is a South African goddess. And before, I know that we do a lot of West African goddesses and yes. It seems like we have a bias towards, I mean, which we probably do have a bias towards them. Yeah. But it's just because of the slave trade and where the slave trade happened. I think those are the stories that seem to have been the most preserved and that the most well traveled. So there is a lot, which means that there's a lot of like carry on of stories, carry on from generation to generation in different parts of the world because of where the slave trade happened. So that's why we do a lot of West African gods and goddesses. But yeah, we're gonna try and start delving into gods and goddesses from other parts of the continent as well.
Definitely. I think maybe in the most recent episodes, we did the last three with African tricksters was Eshu and Anansi. And then the last one was Oshun. Do check those episodes out if you haven't. They are quite interesting ones. I think those ones definitely did have that kind of Western African bias. But I think our initial episodes, we did try to kind of cover all quadrants. Well, at least three out of four.
Yeah.
In most cases.
Yeah.
But we will definitely try and go back to that in the coming episodes.
Cool. So. Over to you.
Over to me. So, we are starting with, despite everything we've just said, we are starting with a Yoruba deity.
Yes.
Yemoja, the giver of all life and the mother of all deities. According to the Britannica Encyclopedia, Yemoja, her name first is derived from the Yoruba words yeye or iya, meaning mother, omo, meaning child, children, and eja, meaning fish. Thus means mother whose children are the fish. So, just to kind of give you a little background on Yemoja, legend states that she descended from the skies with the 16 other Yoruba Orishas who we've spoken about several times in various episodes. Mm-hmm. She is the Orisha also of the Ogun River, which is the largest river within the territory of Yoruba land. And she is the counterpart of Olokun, who is the sea deity, and he represents the unknowable bottom of the sea.
So is he like a merman?
Kind of, yeah. Merman. He's like the...
So I'm like, where are the mermen? You know?
Exactly. He's like the equivalent of like Poseidon, the African equivalent of Poseidon.
I see.
Yeah, the Greek god of the sea. So
Yemoja, some legends say that apparently after she was unfortunately raped.
Oh no.
Yeah. She decided to end her life, threw herself from the top of the mountain as she did 14 orishas. Or gods emerged from her body, and a lot of waters gushed from her womb, giving the gift of water to the earth below and creating the seven seas. So the mother, she's known as the mother of kind of all the waters of the oceans and the seas and all of that. And so there are varying kind of accounts to where she originated from. She's the leader of all river deities. Apparently, she originated from Tapa in the Oke Ogun area. The principal shrine is in Abeokuta, Ogun State. However, the place of her worship began in Saki, a town in modern day Oyo State. People are familiar with African pre-colonial history. We know that the Oyo Empire was a large empire in the pre-18th, 19th century, very much the heart of Yoruba land.
Yeah.
So Yemoja is also kind of frequently portrayed as the wife of various male Orisha, such as Obatala. I'm sure you've heard his name in other myths we've told, Okere, Erinle, and she's said to be the mother of Ogun, Shango, if you guys remember from Gods of Thunder, Oshun from our last episode. Many other Itans, which are Yoruba kind of stories, describe her as never having given birth, but having raised many children, in particular Shango, Dada, and the Ibeji twins. The Yoruba myths also describe her as having long breasts, according to the many children that she nursed. And very sad, but she was quite sensitive and embarrassed about this. Apparently, this is kind of like a common theme throughout many of the stories that are told about her. And quite a few tell the story of her turning herself into a river in response to insults about that by other.
I also find it very interesting how they're not, there's always something that always humanizes
them.
These gods and goddesses, and
that's a good point.
They feel they're just like us. they get insecure, they have, you know, things that they don't like about themselves, or they feel very self-conscious about, which we all do. We have things that we're self-conscious about as well. So yeah, it's very interesting that was exactly what was fixated on. Yeah. Especially because it would make sense, because if she's somebody who, you know, it's meant to be goddess of children and, you know, very fertile, things like that, then it would make sense that, you know, she would have, because she'd be breastfeeding.
That is so true. And I guess that's why a lot of people refer her, she's a lot of the worshippers of Yemoja, because of her roles as kind of being so motherly and protective. She was really worshipped a lot, mainly by women. And obviously, you know, that sensitivity or insecurity she had about that, a lot of women do have it. You know, even postpartum. A lot of women are not very comfortable with their bodies and things, you know, after, you know, this, you know, doing this incredible thing, giving birth to another human. So it's a very, you're 100% right, it's a very relatable human quality, and you know, we do see that a lot in a lot of the stories that we've told since starting this pod. So Yemoja has been likened to actually amniotic fluid because she protects children against the predatory world. And like the sea, she's temperamental and can be soothing or unpredictably violent. Yeah, that's what I say. There's just so many there's a lot of mystique around the sea. It can be the prettiest thing and also the most frightening, scary thing. You can literally die
You can literally die.
You know, and another day.
But we need what is essential. It's essential. Every living thing.
And so that is, I guess, that's the unpredictability.
Yeah, like, it can either be very nurturing or.
Yeah, I mean, in Nigeria recently, we had the floods that affected, you know, 30 out of 36, you know, at least 30 mm-hmm. states. It just kind of shows, you know, how, yeah.
Yeah, because even like, having ever looked at the ocean, just like when you're just like by the water and then you're just looking like, oh my God, this is so pretty. Mm-hmm. But also this is terrifying. Because like, especially when like your eyes go like farther than, when you go farther than your eyes can see, you're like, oh my God, this is so endless. And then that in itself is frightening. Well, I find it quite like,
it is
frightening. I mean, it is. It's like awe-inducing. It's like, oh my God, like I'm so tiny in the face of like comparison to this.
Yeah. So I said, you know, previously, she's the Orisha of fertility, and she also protects not just like bodies of water, like the sea, the rivers, but she has under her protection basically everyone that works, lives, and travels around water. So swimmers, fishers, sailors, boatwrights, protection.workers. These are all people that Yemoja kind of protects. She is associated with kind of fish gill facial markings that are often worn by the Iyawo, who I think are like priests. Mm-hmm. And she is said to have assisted Shango in legend states in ending the practice of twin killings in Nigeria.
Oh.
Which is quite interesting because that was a big thing historically.
Because, you said earlier that she was original, like Ibeji, like twins. Yes. And I know in the South that was a big thing as well in the South. It's interesting that she's attributed to being the one that stopped it.
Cool. And for people who don't know, so Yoruba is more kind of like South, the Yoruba people mostly located in like the southwest of Nigeria. Mm-hmm.
More west
of Nigeria, whereas the south has like some other different tribes, so like Ibibio, Edo, southeast is more like Igbo people and things like that. Mm-hmm. So as you know Africa is extremely diverse, and even within just one country, Nigeria, we have, you know, hundreds of tribes. It's just extremely diverse. So, like all deities, I know we don't really touch on this so much for other deities, but so for Yemoha, her animal totems are the duck, the vulture, and the snake.
Oh,
and small snails. And her sacrificial her sacrificial animals are the ram, duck, lamb, goats, fish, pigeons.
These are like very like sacrificial items. So I'm guessing like that's usually what's like offered to her in all like rituals.
She's represented in her various shrines by sacred stones known as ota, placed in river water, often in a calabash, which is like a
wooden bowl.
And Yemoja is not just kind of relevant in West Africa, but also like she increased in prominence in kind of the Caribbean and the Americas as kind of enslaved survivors of the Middle Passage, often kind of appropriated and prayed to both Yemoha and Olokun to bless their lost kingsmen and to kind of alleviate their suffering. So they're very kind of omnipresent around various islands and coastal areas of Cuba, Trinidad, Brazil, and they kind of served as a continuous reminder.
Is it Creole as well? No, Creole wasn't.
I'm not aware. Maybe, guys. If you are aware, please kind of let us know. I'm not aware. Most of the kind of areas where I think they said she was prominent was kind of like
South America
and the Caribbean.
And actually, throughout history, there have been several attempts to kind of end various African traditional practices, but these were kind of resisted through the establishment of social organizations, kind of formalizing the reverence of deities such as Yemoja and Olokun. Yeah, just kind of keeping those traditions alive. In the Brazilian religious movement, Candomblé, Yemoja is known as Yemanja, and she's been celebrated since the 1930s on New Year's Eve, as her followers often kind of construct like mini altars on beaches, and they send small like prayer boats, paper boats into the sea with inscribed prayers. So yeah, she's very revered even today. In like various US, Brazilian, Puerto Rican homes, Yemanja's altars are often decorated with fountains and other symbols of the sea, like fishnets, miniature boats, and shells. And I think her colors are usually like blue and white. So they usually paint those colors. Her sacred number is 7, representing the 7 seas. Her devotees often wear silver bracelets, and she's often seen wearing full skirts with 7 blue and white layers. Mm. And her necklace, known as the Ileke, is usually made of crystal or blue beads, sometimes with red coral. Mm-hmm. And they usually summon her with a gold rattle.
A gold rattle.
Gourd rattle. Gourd. I'm not really sure what that looks like.
I'm not really sure what a gourd. I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
His vibes.
Yes, are currently, because it's going to be a silent pause, we are currently on Google. Our best friend when it comes to research.
Yes.
And gourd rattle.
So guys, so this looks like, it just looks like a, like rattles you would come across like in.
It looks wooden.
Church. Yes, it's wooden with like some really nice like cool patterns on it. It's just like kind of
maracas. African maracas.
Yeah, it's basically like maracas.
Well, I'm not sure which one came first, so yes. I don't want to say African maracas, but
yes,
they look like maracas.
Yes, that is it, actually. That is it. So Yemoja is often depicted as a mermaid, and she's associated with the moon, and in some especially in some communities, she's associated with water, of course, and feminine mysteries. One of the things we said that we would do in this pod was kind of make reference to various places where African mythology has been kind of included in popular culture. So there was a recent novel kind of published in 2021 by a British Welsh author. Her name is Natasha Bowen. Mm. The novel is called Skin of the Sea, and it follows a mami water. For people who don't know, mami water are like river spirits, water spirits,
it's what they called like the water spirits, as like in it's not even Nigeria actually, Africa, like kind of like a universal term for mermaids, water spirits, things like that.
So it's following a mami water, it's fictional, following a mami water called Simi in her quest to appease Olodumare, again the creator god, Yoruba creator god, and save her people. And there was also like a 2016 mini series made by like a Nigerian British director, Nusa Ibenidion, titled Yemoja, The Rise of the Orisha, which follows a young doctor whose life turns upside down after a politician's son dies under her care, and she is possessed by Yemoja and afflicted with mystical visions and has to somehow kind of get over that and also clear her name.
Sounds like a lot.
It sounded like quite a few things.
Those are all they're talking about. That Neka the pretty serpent, which is very like, I mean, yeah, she's like sort of like a water spirit as well. Basically, it's actually on Netflix. It's a remake of a very old Nollywood, which is like a Nigerian version of Hollywood. Like it's a Nigerian movie, like classic.
Yeah.
That was made in like, I think either late 90s or very early 2000s. And then it was recently remade. And basically, it's sort of like, I won't say it's the best representation. always the best representation. And actually, there's a whole article about how, especially women are like demonized in these things. Like, yeah, she basically is seeking revenge.
Yeah,
she gets powers, and she, which are like mermaid snake powers, and she seeks revenge on everybody whoever like did anything against her or her family. I think her family was killed by some people. Then she's like, the whole thing about her seeking revenge, and then she sort of gets she sort of like renounces her powers at the end. So yeah, which is not really the best
depiction,
representation of, and like, further sort of
African mythology, further demonizes, and
and as we've said, there's the thing that is very present in African mythology, that there's this like duality where it's like, okay, you have more positive sides of like a human, like as a human, you have positive and you have negative sides.
Yeah, nothing is ever going to be
water,
black and white. And then
water, duality in water as well. Yeah. So you can't just depict water as like this very like, you know, evil thing, because no, water has like a lot, so loads of, it's essential to life. So
We are water.
We are literally water.
Literally 2/3 of the human, isn't it?
Like 60%, is water.
But yeah, basically, that's a really good reference. The last thing I'm going to say about Yemoja is that she is still very much kind of celebrated in, even in, not just in the diaspora, but in Nigeria, particularly in Yoruba land, in Ibadan. There's a 17-day long Yemoja festival, which is usually held in October, and it's been held for kind of eons. It's a very special day, and it's called, it kind of culminates with the one day, which is like the culmination of the festival, and that is the Odun Yemoja. So yeah, she is basically like African mermaid, basically. Yeah.
An African mermaid.
She's not even like a little mermaid, she's like the mermaid.
She's the mermaid. She is
the mermaid.
She's the moment.
She is the mermaid. And
sorry, technical difficulties. Do, 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 do. Okay. Do, 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 do. Okay, sorry guys.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. What were you saying?
What was I even saying?
This is, we're very easily distractible. Oh, sorry, guys.
This is why you guys get episodes. Get once every, I don't know
what to call it. Wait. 10 business months.
What was I saying?
We're talking about Nneka the Pretty Serpent.
What are we talking about? Nneka the Pretty Serpent. We're talking about Yemoja and how she's the mermaid.
Oh yeah, she's the mermaid. So she's
actually in this book, in that book Skin of the Sea that I mentioned by Natasha Bowen, Yemoja was, because I didn't really mention how Yemoja was relevant in that. So Yemoja, basically, she's the one that created the mami water, who are like
the origin of the mami.
So she was the main character. She was like the, like the mother of all the mermaids, basically, and like the leader of all the water deities and everything. So she was like the general. So yeah, that's really cool. I think that's actually maybe a good title for this episode. Maybe we'll just African mermaids.
Yeah, African mermaids, you know. Okay. All right, so sorry, first of all, I want to apologize if I butcher any pronunciations, because you know, I am trying.
All we can do is try.
Sorry to the South African people.
Yeah,
but my I'm going to be talking about Inkosazana, which is basically the mermaid goddess of the Zulu people in Southern Africa. And Inkosazana actually translates to heavenly princess, and she's meant to be the daughter of the Lord of the Sky. So I'm guessing like probably, yeah, basically the daughter of God, or daughter of the omnipresent being.
Love that.
And she is known, she often appears as a mermaid, but she's actually a shapeshifter. So she has like multiple different forms that she can appear to people as, or that she's known as. So she's my person as a mermaid, but also as a snake, a rainbow,
okay,
soft, gentle rain, and mist.
Yeah. So poetic.
So poetic.
I love that.
Yeah. And she's basically said to appear to people who are pure of heart. She's actually she's very like, she's great.
She sounds like sunflowers and rainbows.
Yeah. So
she appears as a rainbow.
I
love that.
As a rainbow, yeah. So she starts to obviously dwell in water. She's associated with fertility, agriculture, growth, and also female virgins.
Purity.
Sorry, the laptop's about to die, guys. And she basically appears to people who are pure of hearts. So usually people who are like chiefs of the tribes, or like diviners or people like that. And there's one account of this man who encountered her in like the forest, and she tells him to turn around because apparently if you gaze upon her it can make you like ill and then cause like sudden death. Yes, it's you can't look at her, but and also like apparently her behind is red like fire. I don't know, but she's basically said to appear to people who are pure of heart. Mm-hmm. You can't look upon her directly. Mm-hmm. And she gives instructions to the person to relate to the rest of the society. Mm-hmm. So she's giving like various instructions. So even as far as saying, controlling like the weaning of babies or food and discipline. Basically, she's very like maternal again.
Yeah.
Motherly, very like fertile and all that. Controlling weaning of babies, disciplining of children as well. Also saying, like giving instructions to young women as well about who to mate with. So she's like, and sometimes she says the young women should only go with younger men.
Mm.
And then sometimes she then switches around and says the young women should go with older men. It's very, very, very like interesting. Very interesting instructions. I don't know how the girls of today would react to these instructions, you know.
I mean, different girlies, different responses, innit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So she's also referred to as I'm so sorry again. Nomkubulwana. Again, yeah, bring out soft soaking rains, responsible for both agricultural and human fertility. And appeals are made to her by virgins. You know, she basically is because of virgins and things like that. And at the beginning of spring each year, they appeal to her, bestow her gifts of fertility. So appeals to her to bestow them with gifts of fertility and also select them a suitable husband, which also goes into that whole thing about her picking, you know, you should go with older men, you should go with younger men. And there's recently been like a revival in these ceremonies in response to that man, so that healer, that's how that she appeared to him. Yeah. And so that has basically revived it quite recently. And there's been this practice of like virginity testing as well, which has been incorporated into this ritual in response to the recent AIDS epidemic, actually. I'm sure that probably helped a bit. So they've proved immensely popular in many regions, with between 7,000 to 10,000 young virgins attending ceremonies, which, yeah, I was quite surprised, especially with, like, the stigma and everything.
Against African traditional religion. So we've seen a resurgence.
It seems like there's, like, a resurgence in, you know, these rituals and things like that.
Rainbows, sunshine, flowers, rain, virgins, fertile, that is in Kokosana.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She's back, baby.
So we're back. So yeah, there's also been other recent returns to tradition. I mean, this was written in 2001, so I don't know if this is still being continued. So now.
I don't think so.
I don't know about that.
I'm not sure.
But
I could see it be having a research.
Yeah, having 2001, yeah. So
yeah, I'm not sure.
She's basically known to have like instituted like a day of rest or days of rest that should be basically that it's that whole duality of like, okay, she's this like benevolent, you know, very motherly, and but if you cross her and if you don't do what she wants, then it's not really gonna work out.
You're gonna find out. Yeah.
You're gonna find out.
Yeah.
So they recently reinstituted that the day of rest, which was in response to a claim made by a lady who claimed that Nkosazana had visited her while she was hoeing her field, and she said her children's names were Saturday and Monday, and that on those days no one should use the rivers but should leave them in peace to recuperate, and so she and her children could enjoy them in. The message was to be relayed to all five chiefdoms in the area. Collecting water, washing, or utilizing any water directly from the river on her day, Mondays and Saturdays, is now strictly prohibited.
Wow.
This present revival in this valley bears a striking resemblance to an account given by Bryant many years ago. I'm not really sure who Bryant is. But yeah, which actually seems like a way to, of like environmental balance as well. Like, yes, the water is always available to us, but it doesn't mean that we should always use it. We need to actually give, you know, nature and a bunch of water time to rest as well, and not just.
Yeah. Honestly, guys, like I wasn't gonna say, but even I saw some pictures of the rituals, like when they give the sacrifices to Yemoja, like in the rivers. And the waters were just so brown and so dirty. And there was a lot of like trash and a lot of like recyclable waste, plastics and all of that, you know, polluting the waters. The Ogun River is like brown.
Yeah.
It's completely brown. And it just shows how little we revere like nature. We don't. Like, honestly, like any Nigerians will know like environment.
Environmental.
People are trying to be a bit more conscious about it, but it's a huge issue, it's a huge problem. Water gives and water takes away, you know, in a way. So yeah, it's part of the revering shouldn't just be, I don't think these things should just be, oh, you know, when we're doing the festival and things, it should be a year-round thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's just not enough respect for the
I think even moving away from these traditional ways of living has, given us less respect. Because you can see that people in that time really, really revered and really, really respected the land and the water, of course.
Yes.
And treated it as it should
be treated. What I just saw was just in the effects of industrialization and the effects of poor governance. But that's another podcast. That's not what we're here.
In case you were not aware, we are not actually an environmental podcast.
We are not, but save the planet.
But save the planet, guys. Yes. Recycle. I actually need to recycle more personally. Sorry, that's the personal. It's a personal thing I should probably say. Yeah, so this is actually a really good paper, the same paper I referenced in the beginning. But she basically did a small survey on how popular like these rituals and constraints on using like the days of rest for the river and how many people actually adhered to it and actually believed in it. And she, well, actually, good. The majority of the respondents were very happy to be participating in the rituals, even though many of them did not really have a clear idea of who Inko Susanna actually was.
Yes.
As, you know, these things had been long forgotten, which is sad. It was noted, however, that those who don't observe the day of rest or participate in the rituals have very poor and unproductive gardens.
Ooh.
And those who had some external doubts about the practices were converted Christians who claimed they had abandoned the ways of their ancestors. And one such respondent even went so far as to say these practices were things of darkness, and that ever since she had met Jesus, she refrained from the practices of Nomkubulwana. All the respondents endorsed their support for traditional leadership through chiefs. But yeah, it's interesting how suddenly these are like things of darkness, and you have to, it's either one or the other. There's no sort of way of incorporating both in, you know, your daily life. I mean, like, and even a lot of respondents didn't even remember who the original like goddess was, and they were still following practices because it was a traditional practice.
And that's what needs to be acknowledged. African mythology and these stories and these religions, it's not just all about the mystic and all about the fantasy and all about the story and all about, it's history, it's culture. So to just completely discard it and to completely say, oh, this is darkness, this is a thing of evil, I just think it contributes to a lack of sense of self, and it contributes to, you know, a generation that doesn't know who they are. So it's really important that, you know, as much as, you know, we have our religious beliefs and we have our various kind of lifestyles we want to adopt as a result of that, you don't completely discard these very key stories, myths and legends and, you know, and traditions, yeah. Because it's culture, it's history, it's important. It's what makes us who we are.
Yeah, and it's like, not going back to the environmental thing again, but also going back to the environmental thing. Like, these things were there for a purpose. For a particular purpose, and you can fulfill that purpose while also adhering to whatever current beliefs that you have. It doesn't have to be like mutually exclusive.
It's not one or the other. Life is, like you said, life is full of grace.
So yeah, I'm really looking forward to, or I'm hoping that there'll be more sort of positive representations of, you know, African deities and African mythology in media. I mean, obviously, you know, like, yeah, I was talking about Beyonce as well, doing like, that was very positive. But I think even then, I think even some people would still not.
Juju, Illuminati.
Yeah, all those saying many things about that still, even though she was literally trying to promote a positive, you know, outlook on that. But I think the more positive media that we have about this, like, the better it will be, and then it will encourage people to, you know, have curiosity and maybe just say, oh, I can respect my past traditions and my history and also uphold the beliefs I have now. I think that's a very crucial lesson.
Wow, today was Sunday school sermon.
Today was, we just preach. The vibes are not really there.
Today was everything that we said beef was not. A public service announcement. Well, we just thought, you know, let's drop a bit of wisdom in it. Let's drop a bit of wisdom. It's a Sunday. And
I mean, this will not come out on a Sunday, though.
Yes. Huh?
It's not going to come out on a Sunday.
Well, it is a Sunday.
Guys. It is a Sunday. Currently, where we are, it is a Sunday.
So, guys, you know the drill. African proverb of the day. So, it was actually really, really hard to find a proverb, one proverb to kind of speak on, because there were just so many great ones about water,
mm-hmm.
Just from all across the continent. So I've brought up four that I thought were really, really good ones and kind of touched on some of the things that we spoke on today. So I think I'm just going to read the first two and I read the others. So the first is, do not throw away the water in your water pot simply because you have heard the rain.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's deep.
That one for me, like, I know usually we don't say what we think the proverbs mean, but I was thinking that one kind of has to do with kind of conservation and preserving the environment and in general just being modest and
being content
and not being wasteful, being prudent as well, planning, mm-hmm. Being cautious as well and responsible. So balance. Yeah. That's what that proverb says to me. So the second one was, having rain clouds is not the same as having rain. So that also kind of highlights to me kind of the unpredictability of like just weather, the environment, and life.
Yeah.
And also, like, you can't,
things are not always what they appear to be.
That's perfect. Things are,
yeah. Not what they appear to be.
That's perfect. Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna hand it over to you. Pass the baton.
Do not despise the river, then eat fish from it.
Wow. Yeah. So
we basically, yes,
guys,
we've done that.
This proverb is like, in fact, yes, you should just be attached to it. Post.
Just
because,
like,
it's a word. Like, that's deep. Because these waters that we throw in our plastic, we throw our, you know, black nylon bags and the bottles and everything into killing the, you now want to still try and get fish from it. You still want to get life from it, but you're not taking care of it. And that was what we're saying. Like, it shouldn't be just a thing of, oh, you're honoring the river once a year during the festival.
It should be continuous.
It's a lifestyle thing. It's continuous.
And the next one is, the last one is, you cannot know the extent of waters you have not been to.
Woo!
Yes. Yeah.
Don't judge. And you never know in life. You just never know. And it speaks to kind of what there are just so many things we don't know about life. There's so many things we don't know about.
Is that in a literal sense? There's literally nothing. We don't know everything.
So, you don't know everything. And you can't judge kind of based on what you don't know. Oh, guys, one thing we didn't do, we got a bit carried away. We didn't even tell you guys where the proverbs were from. So the first one was from about the throwing away the water was from Nigeria. The second one about the rain clouds was from Kenya. The third one about despising the river then eating fish was Nigeria. And then the last one was from Tanzania, about not knowing the extent of waters you have not been to.
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Listen to the rivers that protected you. Sorry, don't be so copyright claim this. I'm so sorry to TLC. We love TLC.
We do not have the funds. We do not.
Please don't come for us.
We do not have the funds. We do not have the funds. Okay, let's go. We do not have the funds. Okay, let's do it. We do not have the funds.
Please don't copyright claim us.
Okay, guys, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Have a lovely week.
Bye.